Hey everybody, just a little quick side note before I take you right to the podcast. In this interview I speak with Peter Giglio, who you'll meet in a minute, and we all know how technology works. Sometimes it's our friend, sometimes it's our foe. In this interview we had just a heck of a time getting a proper connection with each other over Skype, so sometimes the line is a little bit gargled, and sometimes his voice fades out just a bit. But stick with it, and you get a lot of really great information from a terrific writer and terrific editor. And so I will leave you to it. Thanks, everybody. So, Peter, you're an executive editor, but you're also a writer. Is that true?
Yes, that is true.
And you have a new book coming out. Is that what I heard?
Well, yeah, I have a book that came out in June 27th called Anon through Hydra Publications, and it's a book about institutional terror as well as familial terror, and introduces readers to a young protagonist who isn't as affected by evil and difference in the world that I've created with. It's a very unique book, very strange book, and I hope people will check it out and enjoy it. It is available now, and then I have a novella that's coming out from Utopia Press in September 16th, called A Spark in the Darkness. That novella is a vampire story, but it is not a romantic vampire story, even though our protagonist is drawn in by romantic notions, misconceptions, things that she's seen in TV shows, movies. But ultimately, in A Spark in the Darkness, spark is humanity versus the sparkly vampires that we've seen recently. A couple of quick things on the horizon. I've been contracted by executive editor John Skip for a novel with Ravenous Shadows line called The Dark, which should come out next year. It's a novel that I'm writing with my often writing partner, Scott Bradley, who is a Bram Stoker nominee. Very excited about that as well.
Well, you're just a busy little guy.
Yes. Busy in a way.
Yeah. I seem to have a lot of overachievers on my show.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad I fit the bill.
Well, as a writer, do you remember your very first acceptance letter?
Yeah, I do. It's a great story, actually. I was working my day job in corporate America at the time, and my friend who I mentioned earlier, Scott Bradley, who I've known since I was a kid, got in touch with me, and he had been invited to submit to an anthology called Werewolves and Shapeshifters, Encounters with Within. And of course, this would be a professional sale, so I never sold anything before. I had stopped really writing seriously in college when I had moved on and done some practical things and decided to go make some money. Based on the girl I was dating at the time, and she talked sense to me. So this was an old dream that I got to refill. And I had started doing a little bit of writing, but nothing very serious because I was working 50 hours as a manager. I didn't have to go through all of the rungs and hurdles, although I've received several rejections since, because Scott and I came up with a great little story, and we wrote it, submitted it, and it got accepted. And it was just one of those wide-eyed moments where, you know, this isn't supposed to happen. I was going to be, you know, in bookstores, and it was a professional sale, and it was in an anthology edited by John Skip. So, of course, it was just an immediate dream come true, and that, of course, got me to seriously contemplate writing as a career. It's all happened very quickly. That acceptance came in 2010, and here we are in 2011. Things have changed dramatically as a result.
So you're fading out just a little bit, but let's just keep going. It'll probably write itself out, I think. And what are you currently working on with Evil Jester Press?
Well, Evil Jester Press is my day job. I work as executive editor. The book that I have just completed is an anthology with several great authors. It's called Help Wanted, Tales of On-the-Job Terror. And this is an anthology of work-related horror stories. It includes Stephen Volk, includes Dave Dunwoody, Jeff Strand, Joe McKinney, Gary Brandner, number one New York Times bestselling author Amy Wallace is in the book as well. Several just fantastic authors, Vince Lagano, a four-time Bram Stoker winner, Lisa Morton. We've just recently received our first blurb, Jonathan Mayberry, which will be appearing on the book. Just a fantastic source of this collection. That comes out October 1st. We are opening for novel submission on September 1st. So that's another exciting thing. We're in talks with a lot of individuals to submit novels to us. We're very excited by what comes with that. We just recently signed a book deal with Chip. And I'm not going to talk too much about that book because I'll leave that to Jeremy, but we're very excited to have him on board, as well as several others. One of our short story anthologies that's currently open for submission is called Jester World, Terrifying Tales from the Fun Park, and it is edited by myself and Bill Tucker, who's the primary editor on it. Bill's, of course, somebody who I think everybody in the horror genre knows because he's edited so many fine anthologies, and we're really excited to have him on board as well. So a lot of great stuff on the horizon, and I've had a great time working as executive editor and helping shape the direction of this new small press, which, believe it or not, has only been in existence for 3 months.
Oh my gosh, no way.
Yeah.
Well, that's terrific, taking off like a rocket.
That's what it looks like, and Charles Day is the owner of the press, and Charlie is a great guy as well. He's a great guy to work with, and I've written a couple of short stories with him.
Cool, and how did you get involved with Evil Jester?
Well, you know, it's an interesting tale. Charles Day, who I just mentioned, a nonfiction imprint called Hidden Thoughts Press deals with concerns, things with mental health care industry. And he's been talking for a very long time about opening up a fiction imprint. When we worked on a story together a few months back, we started communicating via email and eventually started talking on the phone. And I had thought about how a small press could really succeed and do some things differently. And I shared those thoughts with Charlie, hoping that he would take that as advice and he would run off and create this press on his own. It turns out Charlie really has too much going on right now between his day job, between his nonfiction imprint, everything else, writer. So he said to me, great ideas. I totally agree with you. When press, because you're going to run it. Right? I kind of, you know, was taken aback by this notion. It was a wow moment. And I said, well, you know, Charlie, I've got so much going on right now. I'm interested. You definitely got my interest, Pete, here. But allow me to finish up some other things I'm working on, and then we'll talk about it some more. So he created the forum, the Evil Jester Press forum, and said, well, Pete, whenever you're ready to go, just go ahead and do it, thinking it would be like a 3 month or a 4 month down the road thing. Like, this might be something I'd be starting right about now. And that's kind of what I thought, too.
Yeah.
But the seed was planted. There was nothing I could do about it. I mean, one of the things I've learned is you have to go with the project that wants to be released. I mean, if you allow these things to stew and fester for too long, then sometimes they lose their potency. And so 2 days later, I was posting the submission call for Help Wanted, Tales Upon the Job Terror, and I was up and running. And, of course, Charlie just laughed at me. Said, you know, you're just like me. You say you're going to do this later, and then you end up doing it sooner rather than later. And it was a great moment for us because things just started coming into place within weeks of putting that submission call out. We got 147 submissions for the anthology, which is an amazing number considering that we had a six-week window. And
wow.
I know, and just the quality of submissions we received, we probably could have put five or six books together. And that you know, that might happen. We, if the book does well, we may, you know, turn it into a bit of a franchise and do part two and part three.
I hope you do, because I have the perfect story for it, and I was irked that I missed the call.
I hear this a lot, and I still receive emails, and, you know, are you going to do part two? And we haven't even published part one yet, so, I mean, it's kind of a wait and see right now, but I hope we do, too. I think it's a terrific concept for an anthology and something that isn't being done all over the place, you know. It's not just another, and I'm not knocking zombie anthologies, but it's not just another zombie anthology, or it's not just another vampire anthology. It's really something that, it's horror, and it's something we can all relate to, because we've all had jobs. And we all know that there is horror on the job, but by taking it to that next step and taking the metaphors that come from that and expanding upon them, I think you can go some really interesting places. And I think this anthology that we have does go some interesting places, and I think people are going to be wowed by it. I really do.
Oh, I bet so. In your experience, what is the best promotional plan or promotional material, promotional outlet?
You know, it's a tough question to answer, because it's such a tough market right now.
Oh, isn't it?
I guess what it really comes down to is you have to be willing to do everything. I know a lot of authors, you know, they love to write, they love creative aspects, but they don't like, they have a hard time shifting gears to becoming a salesperson, so to speak. I mean, marketing is just not in their blood. And I totally understand that. I mean, there was a day and age when books and CDs and just different types of media seemed to sell themselves. That's not the world that we live in right now. I can't stress enough the importance of social media, you know, social websites like Facebook, you know, it's just a way to reach out to individuals, way to make yourself known, and a way to build some relationships that you want to otherwise build. I mean, on one hand, we live in a very different age, but we also live in an exciting age, because the boundaries of geography no longer seem to apply as they used to. It used to be that an author would have to go on a nationwide book tour, or on a, you know, perhaps an international book tour. They were so lucky to have that kind of opportunity. But anymore, with the age that we're in, the information age that we're in, I can easily communicate with people in the UK. I can easily communicate with people in Australia. I mean, when we got submissions for Help Wanted Tales of On the Job Terror, we received submissions from Australia, UK. In fact, there's four stories in the book from UK authors. Israel, Norway, you know, the list just goes on and on in terms of where we receive submission from. So it is a global marketplace. It's just that you can't be afraid to speak out. You can't be afraid to make yourself known, to use all the resources that are out there. A little bit of everything seems to work, but it's hard to capture lightning in a bottle. You know, there's only so much anybody can do. obviously, I think they should come on the Jennifer Crest podcast. I did a short story which appeared recently, and as we speak right now, it's already received 111 listens. And, you know, so that's exposure, and that gives people an opportunity to hear your voice, hear what you're about.
Sure. And my show is the fast track to the top, I'll tell you that right now.
It's a kingmaker.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, the thing about it is that everyone should remember is that people don't buy books. They buy books from people. People buy books from people. And making yourself known and letting people know what you're about and letting people know why you do what you do is just as important as telling them what you've done. That helps a great deal. Again, there's no magic fast track. I think conventions are fantastic. Conventions are a terrific way to meet a lot of people in a short period of time with similar interests. It's a great opportunity to answer questions about your book or to just get out there and show people that you're serious about what you do.
Conventions are magical for me. And how do you feel about the uprising of ebooks? Do you think that paper books are an endangered species?
No, I think print books will always be with us as long as we want them. I think supply and demand still apply. At first, I was terrified of ebook, very resistant to it. And what I've done is I've learned to embrace technology without dismissing the past. Oftentimes, I'll buy a book in ebook form, read it, and if I like it, then I buy the print book and put it on my shelf. Two things happen there. The author gets double royalties. You know, that's always nice.
Yeah.
If something just doesn't track with me, then I don't buy the print book. It's been hard for me to come to that realization because I love print books and I have shelves of books and I love the smell and I love the look and I love to just be able to look over and see all the spines of my favorite books staring back at me like old friends. And, you know, if I didn't have every Stephen King book in hardcover on the shelf, I would feel kind of naked. And that's just an example. I mean, they mean so much to me. They're so much a part of who I am. They're so much a part of the decor of my house and in my lifestyle in terms of what I'm about. But at the same time, technology can be a wonderful thing. Ebook does give us that immediacy. It does give us, you know, I can go on Amazon.com or I can go at the Barnes & Noble and I can start reading the book in 20 seconds. And if it's something I've really been anxiously awaiting, I don't have to wait for it to come to me. And now, obviously, the bookstore always provided that kind of immediate gratification as well. And I'll always go to bookstores. And I'll always buy print books. I'll never stop. But even with the ebook uprising, print books are still selling. It's just a balance. I think we can have both, and they can coexist.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I would be the crack whore without the crack if print books went out.
Well, if we keep buying them, they'll keep printing.
Yay!
That's the important thing, and that book lovers should always remember that. Never forget to buy print books of books that mean a lot.
Exactly. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm repeating myself, but you keep buying them, they'll keep printing.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny, when my first book came out in 2005, I think. Having an ebook, it came out in ebook and print, but having an ebook was almost a shameful thing. I remember like sounds of pity coming from people like, "Oh, ebook, oh." And now, when I say, "Oh, my new book is coming out," people will say, "Well, it better be an ebook, or else I won't buy it."
Yeah, it's funny. It really, the stigma has changed.
Yeah, considerably.
And I think it's good that it has, because I think anything that can get a new generation excited about reading, because ultimately it's the story and the words that do matter. A lot of my love for books is really just, it's kind of an irrational love, but it makes complete sense too. I'm big into nostalgia. I'm big into the past. I'm big to, a lot of times I don't just buy a book I love. I seek out a first edition from 1974, and then get the Mylar protective cover and put that on there. It's not just about owning the most recent trade paperback of it. I prefer to own it in its primary first form as it was originally published with the original dust jacket. And it's just a quirk, and I know a lot of people have the same quirk, and there's no stopping. We're always going to feel that way.
Why the horror genre? Why are you in horror?
Well, horror is an early love of mine. I mean, science fiction was what I wrote when I was in college. I really wanted to be a science fiction writer, but unfortunately, I don't know any science, and I was never... In horror, you'll have a man who's trying to put his family back together, and then there's a monster that's getting in the way of everything. And that's a very simplified type of idea of what horror fiction is, but it's just very interesting. It's a place that I'm at in my life right now. I read a lot of horror. I like horror because I think there's a lot of opportunity to work with metaphor, and there's a lot of opportunity to make the monsters about something inside us. It's not necessarily what I'm always going to write, although by breaking through as a horror author, I realize I'm allowing myself to be labeled as such. But I do want to write literary mainstream fiction. I do want to try science fiction. I have several unsold science fiction stories that I think are terrific. And I have several science fiction novels that are outlined. But horror is, it's comfortable. That sounds so strange, but it's comfortable because there's something very, I don't know if I'm getting at this the right way, but it's very visceral and it's very real. And there are so many things that force our characters to look deep within themselves. And it's just a wonderful genre to write in. I also like to be a little bit of a rebel, and since horror is not really the flavor of the moment in the publishing world, I want to bring it back. I want to help be part of that movement that brings horror back into the spotlight. Once that is done, I'll probably lose all interest. If that's happening, I'll probably lose all interest and start writing romance novels or something. No, probably. and romance is very much in the forefront right now. Romance is very big right now.
It seems like it has been for quite a while to me.
I don't think it's going away. People absolutely love stories. The funny thing about romance, though, is that so many of my stories, so much of what I write, they have love stories within, in other words, when we talk genre, it's kind of funny because almost every major book that's ever been hugely successful has elements of horror. So many books that aren't considered romance novels have elements of romance. If two people fall in love within your story, you have an element of romance. If your story takes place in the Old West, then suddenly, it has its elements of being a Western. There are ways to merge all of them. There are so many books that do that and get considered mainstream fiction, but they have elements of horror, they have elements of romance. They just have a little bit of everything. So that's why I'm a little bit uncomfortable in terms of talking about genre, because ultimately, genre is a label. It's what we label things so that we can easily categorize it. But I think, for instance, that Richard Yates's Revolutionary Road is as much a horror novel as Stephen King's It, because the characters are dealing with horrific situations. Their lives are imploding. And it is, in a greater sense, it is horror. And, it's just not called horror because it doesn't have a monster that comes up to it. It doesn't have a horde of zombies. But there is that suburban horror that does go on, that is so scary and creepy, does inform us about who we are.
Have you ever read a Lois Duncan?
No, I have not.
Oh my goodness. She writes, or she wrote, I don't know if she's still with us anymore, young adult horror thriller novels. She wrote I Know What You Did Last Summer, and just a slew of others. Oh, I read those like in late elementary school, early junior high. Man, that's probably what scarred my fragile little mind, but...
Probably.
I consider it a positive influence because her books were really good. Very, very creepy.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to check them. I've never read. Of course, I've never picked up.
Oh, yeah, they're good. I don't know if they'd be so good now that I'm an adult, but they were, creepy, creepy, creepy back then. Well, thank you so much for talking with me, Peter.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on your show.
Anytime. Open door invitation. Come on back.
I'll keep that in mind.
You can keep your stupid ethics at the door, though.